Café Rollist is your caffeinated tabletop RPG break. It started as our exclusive Patreon show, but following a survey with our supporters, I am happy now to share its most recent episode here with you. If you enjoy this show, please consider checking out our archive of 100 or so additional episodes, which are still exclusive on Patreon. Welcome for another Café Rollist. I am joined by the second half, is that correct, of Did and D&D, or are you Did and D&D and Kat is just someone who jumped into the passenger seat?
No, because like the channel, the Geek Dogs and D&D, D&D is just me. And when I was saying, Kat was asking me questions about what it's like to have multiple personalities, and I was like, well, you're a GM. I was like, so just imagine when you're in a setting where you have to... Sorry, my dog's scratching on the bed. Imagine a setting where you have to, like, you've got, like, five NPCs, and you can imagine how they would react to stuff. I was like, so it's basically just like I live with a D&D party in my head all the time. And she's like, oh, we could totally do a thing, and, like, you could actually bring them to life. We can make characters for all of your alters. And she got really excited. I was like, that can be a thing. And then Did and D&D came about. So we're definitely, like, two halves of the same thing. But my half is just further split, I guess, than hers, because she's one person and I'm a few.
So could you introduce yourself, actually, because yeah, I should have encouraged you to do that first.
Ah, it's no problem. So I am Danny. I am the host of the Chaos Collective, which is kind of what we call ourselves as like a whole. But on the most part, I just go by Danny. I openly live with dissociative identity disorder, which used to be known as multiple personality disorder. It is nothing like the movie Split. I have absolutely no desire to kidnap people and murder them. Like, it's just not a thing.
While I do, and I don't have did, so you see.
Exactly. Like, you know, the people without it are the ones you have to watch.
So, I've got two ice-breaking questions. The first one is, in this time of COVID-19, what is your routine like? Has it changed or not?
It's not changed too much. I work from home anyway. I work as a clinical animal behaviorist, so I do consults with people that have problems with their pets, mostly dogs. So a lot of it is at home. I then go and visit clients and then come back home. So it's just the visiting clients part that I don't do anymore, but I video call them instead. So my day-to-day hasn't changed hugely, other than the fact that I have a 7-year-old 24 hours a day.
Well, that can change things quite a bit. At least it did
that's the biggest thing. Yeah, it's like any parents out there, you know, we love our children dearly, but there's a reason why we have a school. You know, teachers exist for a reason, parents exist for a reason. You know, you have parents that are full-time parents and part-time parents, because you can't parent and teach at the same time as well as working. Like, it's an impossible task. So now everyone's kind of got to work and parent and be a teacher, and it's just... So that's the biggest change, I would say. A lot of my friends, we used to video call regularly anyway, if we weren't meeting up at the pub, so I miss the social aspect of hugging people, but it's the parenting side that is the biggest change for me, which I assume you'll probably understand.
Yeah, mine is 2 years old, and I mean, yeah, clearly childcare is a proper job. I'm trying to manage, and to, with of course, with the help of my wife, but she's working from home, so she's less available. I think I'm getting better at it, but yeah, when I was saying it's a proper job, I mean, I try to manage while the great professionals at this nursery, they did a lot of things which I don't feel capable of doing. I think it's gonna have a lot of catch up in terms of education, training in a number of things, and we do things with Amy. He certainly goes more into parks and so on, but it's a mix of things.
It's so difficult.
Yeah.
I was talking to a friend of mine who, like yourself, she has toddlers, and I'm like, I couldn't imagine what it would be like to be 24 hours stuck inside with a toddler, because my little one is a toddler. We could go to the parks, we could go to play centres, we could burn off that excess energy. And, like, you guys can't now. And I'm like, I'm really glad he's 7, because I can give him, like, his Nintendo Switch or any other console of choice, and he can go off and play a game for a little bit, so I get a little bit of a breather and some me time back. But, I mean, toddlers, they're, like, 24 hours a day, because they... Does your sleep? Do they at least sleep?
Well, the point of this show, well, the reason it's at 2 p.m. in the afternoon is because at the moment when we put him for his nap, so he's sort of sleeping now. What he's been doing for a couple of weeks now is he doesn't fall asleep as much at 2 p.m. after his bottle of milk, but he doesn't complain being put in his bed. So he's okay. He hangs out there, and usually after a little while, he falls asleep. In the meantime, we can hear him giggle and have fun doing stuff.
Usually, and play to themselves.
Yeah, usually when we found him asleep, he's in his bed, sprawled with his cushions and teddy bears thrown out of the bed. But I guess he throws everything out, and then he gets bored, and then he falls asleep. But it's very tough. The toughest I find is in the evening, because you take care of him all day, and I mean it's okay, but it's quite demanding. But the evening, he's very overexcited and very noisy, and that's kind of the moment when you are at the end of your rope. And I mean, when you work and he's at the nursery, it's not that you don't come back from work full of energy, but because you're more available, because, you know, it's something different than what you've been doing the rest of the day.
It's like you're counting down to bedtime.
Yeah, exactly.
And then hoping that they actually stay in bed. Because I think unless you're a parent, you don't know how... Just demanding it is just having to be available all that time. And then you just end up... You find yourself staying up a little bit. You find yourself staying up really late just so you can have some time on your own.
Yeah, that's the thing. We don't have time on our own with Persophilia. We take turns at taking care of him, and then when it's the evening, at best we watch a movie together. But most of the time, we just need to get each of us in a corner of the room and be with ourselves for a couple hours. Have you picked
just adults?
Yeah, have you picked any new skill or hobby, despite your routine not changing so much because of the situation?
Not really. I mean, a couple of years ago, I got diagnosed with, like, a chronic illness, so I kind of had, like, the frustrations of lockdown happen a couple of years ago. So I picked up a new hobby then that I'm just still refining. So I got into making things out of polymer clay. Because I quite enjoy sculpting. I was always really rubbish at it. And I'm one of those people where when I do something, I like to do it and I can critique myself quite harshly. So if I'm doing something I know how to do and I don't do it well, I can beat myself up a little bit about it. So I was like, I'm going to try something completely new and then I can only get better. This is my latest little creation.
Cool. It's polymer clay. What's called milliput, two components, and you mash them together, or is it something different?
It's something different. There are some parts of polymer clay that's very similar, so like milliput's quite like the epoxy stuff that you make together. This is just, it's like a plastic clay that you just mold out of, and then you bake it in the oven.
Oh, so that's like Fimo, so we say all the brands. I'm trying to remember that from back in the days when I was... hobby making. Give me a second. I'm going to show you something I did.
Yeah.
So I didn't do the whole of it. I just did the cloud, but I'm still quite proud of it. So
wow.
This is a resin cast. So those were bootlegged in the time because you could not find the actual ones in Belgium and France. Then the fandom was there, but most of the products were not available. I should dust that. This is a resin which I painted, and to reproduce the scene, I made the what is it called in English, the Nuage Supersonic, the magic cloud out of milliput.
Yeah.
and painted it. I love this little statue.
Yeah.
But it really needs a good dusting from up there.
Yeah, no, this kind of stuff, because I've got this little guy. I made like a little kitsune. And then I made bag end the other day as well, as a candle holder.
Oh, wow, that's so cute, huh?
They're so cute. And it's just, it's a way to kind of keep you sane.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that the clay itself is quite grounding for me.
Yeah, I miss that, but yeah, you cannot do everything.
No. So that's what I started doing, and now I've got more time to do it, so I'm trying to come up with more extravagant things to do and trying to push myself. And I've got like a collection of dragons that I did about a year ago now that I really want to try, because I've got a few other techniques that I've tried. I want to kind of bump up doing some more dragons.
Have you ever done
a lot of mimics that I did?
Have you ever done anything you used in dungeon crawling then for D&D game or something similar?
Yeah, I've made a couple of like little mimic boxes, and we've got a cardboard like diorama up there that myself and my partner made. That's got like an entire pub scene in it for one of our. Actually, we're doing Descent to Avernus at the minute with a few friends. So one of the pubs in Baldur's Gate, we did up there. So there's a few little things that I try and mix in. But a lot of the stuff I make is too big to fit into minis. So when I make... So some of the monsters I can do because they're bigger, but I'm not that good at doing really tiny stuff yet. Hopefully yeah, I'll get there.
It's tough. You need some tools. You cannot hand make them. You mentioned before. I'm keen to resume the conversation we're having just before we started the stream. You were telling me you're about to have a go for your first time in Mage.
Mage the Ascension.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm so excited because I like World of Darkness as a thing. Anyway, I play quite a bit of Vampire the Masquerade. And I've dabbled a little bit in Werewolf. Werewolf is really fun as well. But mages were always that thing that, like, I really want to be a mage. I want to see what it's like to just be able to do anything in the world, but it just be really silly things because I wouldn't take over the world or anything. And my partner was joking how everything at the minute in 2020 is like a bunch of mages have just gone wrong and they just need to, like, reset things.
It certainly feels a bit like that. My memories of Mage are patchy. I played it only once. It was a rather linear one shot, but quite good. And and we played the same mage through different times, but you would go. So you played them today, and I was kind of a drug addict, and then we would jump back in time and play the memories from them because they realized that they were amnesiacs and going backwards. So I don't remember what was my second incarnation. It was probably something like 15th century, but yeah, at the end I found out that my first incarnation, and it's funny because the game master did it so I started with the character who was the least of a leadership role. And as you went back in time, the dynamic of the character sort of inverted themselves, because each time we would be handed a little background, they were all the characters were pre-written for us. They were pre-generated.
Oh, wow.
And in the last incarnation, the group and myself realized it was nicely foreshadowed, but we didn't get the twist before that time, that I was actually Jesus Christ. They were the apostle.
So, that's brilliant.
And then we went back to today, which it's hazy in my mind.
Going back from being Jesus to today, like, no wonder your character was a drug addict.
That mage, I remember I needed, or music was helping with my mage, so I would actually use, I had an iPod or something like that, probably my phone, and I played some weird ass music to say, my character is dancing.
One of the mage types is like, they are essentially drug addicts, aren't they? They get a lot of their magic and stuff from taking in other substances.
I don't remember what they call.
No, my partner knows. He's been schooling me on mage for the past year on and off, and he's finally gone, okay, I'm just going to get the core rule book. But he really wants to play it as well. And I'm like, I can't DM very well anyway. I'm like, I'm not going to be able to DM Mage. Like, I don't know enough about it. You'll have to find a friend that can DM it for us if we're going to do it as a game where you play. But hopefully he'll do like a little one shot for us. And I'm kind of hoping that we can get Kat and Kelvin involved. Because I know as part of Mage, you can have one of their flaws is to have multiple personalities. So I think it'd be quite interesting to play a game that has my disorder as like a set kind of component for one of the characters to see how well they actually do it.
Yeah, interesting. To be honest, I've watched a couple of episodes of your show, but I should dive into it a bit more. It was interesting. It's just YouTube format is not the easiest for me in terms of, it's difficult for me, well, back in the days to watch while I was commuting. Like when I take my son to the park, I can listen to a podcast still today, but watching a video while watching it that is not running up and down a tree is difficult. But
we have debated of transforming it into a podcast as well for people to kind of listen to. At the minute, it's mostly me and Kat just discussing life and things and building the characters that we're going to do on the campaign. The campaign will be better than what we've got at the minute. We need to cut things down because we talk a lot. Which for some viewers, they enjoy just sitting back with a cup of tea and just listening to us talk about mental health and life and stuff. And other people like just get to the character building. Like so we have a nice mix of the people that are there for the mental health and the people that are just there for the D&D. And we're trying to help like we can get like a crossover and create like a bit of a safe place for people that have mental illness to kind of go, you know what, you're fine, like just come and play some D&D with us.
Especially one of the episodes I did watch was the one when you discussed about your experience at Dragon Meet. It was especially interesting. So did you
we got to meet you there.
Sadly, Dragon Meat is. I really miss Dragon Meat. You mentioned hugs. The physical friendliness is something we've been missing right now. But tell us a bit more about that experience, my interaction with you was like, I think, it's kind of these experience when you are.
It was very brief. Yeah. I think it's like we're passing because you're so busy at Dragon Meat anyway. But when because Kat loved the morning, I think that kind of was one of her favorite parts. So in the morning, like, she sent us a message and was like, if you want to come in with me, you can come in with me, or you can lie in and come in later. And she sent a message in the morning that got a reply saying, yeah, we're going to have a lie in, we'll meet you there. And within minutes, like, we were up and dressed, and she was like, you've just messaged me saying you're staying in. And like, it was one of my alters that replied going, I want to have a lie-in. And the other one was like, nope, we're getting up. I'm like, dressed. And she's like, oh, okay, yeah, cool. She's like, so who replied? And I was like, I don't know. I don't even know why I picked up my phone. And then, like, as we're going through the day, it's like different parts of us teleport depending on what's going on. Because Luna is my, like... is like the most sociable of alters. So most of the time when people meet us out and about in those kinds of places, it's either me or Luna or both of us that you're talking to. And Luna's got a lot higher pitch voice than me. And it's an interesting experience because sometimes I'm like, I don't really remember a lot of it. I remember we played a vampire game that was really fun. Modiphius ran that. We met a whole bunch of people. We jumped in on the stream with Anjuli and did some mini painting. But I can't remember like a lot of the bits. And then when Kat talks to like Luna or one of my alters, they kind of fill in the gaps. So it's fascinating from her perspective because I'm like, oh, I don't really remember. And then someone else will tell her, oh, we did this and I remember this. And she's like, Kenny doesn't remember that. So it's a weird thing to do, but Dragon Meat itself was... it was just so much fun. It's one of the nicest conventions I've ever been to. Because it's just so much friendlier than the ones like Comic-Con and some of your bigger ones. Like, everyone is really friendly. The stalls are amazing. Like, there's so much shopping. The shopping was brilliant. And just speaking to the different kind of people that make the games and seeing all the podcasts owned and everyone that does the podcasts, it was just a really wonderful day. And we can't wait to go back. for when they decide to do it again, because I'm assuming it probably won't be on this year. But
well, I hope it will be. I mean, who knows? But it's supposed to be late November or very early December. So yeah, we don't know. I'm supposed to have a panel at UK Games Expo, which has been postponed to August.
Okay.
As far as we know, Expo is still happening in August. But yeah, to be honest, I'm not convinced.
Yeah.
We'll see, but who knows? Yeah, you might be right. Maybe in November, December, it won't be happening again. But yeah, we'll see. That would be a big hole in the heart of a lot of tabletop RPG fans in the UK. Especially, I got this year. I motivated some French tabletop RPG podcasters and Portuguese designers to visit us in Dragonmead. So that would be a pity if it was cancelled. But yeah,
it won't be.
Yeah.
But at the minute, I think that's the hardest thing about lockdown, is the fact that we can't make any future plans because we don't know what it's going to be like in 2 months' time or 2 weeks' time or 3 months' time. And there's events and conferences that I'm dying to go to. And I'm like, will we even be able to go? Will they be running? If they are running, how safe are they going to be? Like, we just don't know.
Yeah, it's really weird. You know, I mean, that's one thing to know. Okay, we're gonna be in situation X for 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, 6 months. But it's another to go in a couple weeks at a time. And at the end of the couple weeks, you've got someone showing up in front of number 10 and saying, and now we are postponing things of 3 weeks or now we're gonna start stopping the lockdown, but it's going to be step by step, and we need to be careful because things could happen again and we'd be in full lockdown again. And I mean, I'm not usually very to cut a slack with, leadership rulers, but right now I'm a bit like, they're playing it by ear, because no one ever faced that situation in those circumstances.
No, we're on completely new territory. Like, no one in our time has been through this, so no one really knows what to do. And a lot of people out listening to the science, they're not looking at the history, they're just like going, oh, well, it'll be different. And it's like, well, no.
Yeah, it's. I mean, we already had the discussion on this show, but the only thing I can compare it to. So I work in transport and urban planning, and you can compare it to some extent to 9/11, and you look at the few things, but they're not so minor. And in the grand scheme of things, I mean, 9/11 was a tragedy, but it was, and the other terrorist attack were a tragedy. But in the grand scheme of things, they do not compare at all with what's going on right now. But those things still had ongoing consequences on the way we design space, on the way we board a flight and we get off of a flight, and things which we can or cannot do in a certain environment. And now it's like, okay, conventions. Let's say, well, there's no lockdown, but there's still no vaccines. Are we going to be like, I don't know if you've seen the videos of in Israel, they still allow protests, but people need to stay apart 2 meters away from each other. And you got those weird protests, which looks like a procession with people far apart from each other. And are conventions gonna look like that? It's already very hard to finance a convention. So it's really weird. My job, I have no idea the sort of projects I will be working on, what they're gonna be like when I resume, because it's rail station, airport. I don't know what airport's gonna be like when we resume things.
It's like, is everyone gonna be like tested as you come in and out of the country? Like, are you going to have, like, the health insurance? Is that going to go up ridiculously? Do we have to sign, like, a certificate of health? Is everyone going to have to start quarantining themselves? There's so many things that we can't understand. And that's, I've been thinking a lot about, as you've been saying, like, the aftermath of how things are going to change once this all kind of dies down is, you know, is everyone going to go back to work? Are people going to start working from home more? What's going to happen with just like childcare and like teaching and home workers? And are they going to stay at home more? It's just so much is up in the air, and things that people said, well, we can't do that. You know, we can't ground all flights. We can't do all this. It's like, well, you've done it. So yeah. It'll be interesting to see what happens, especially for like the environmentalist sort of point of view, because everything that they've been trying to fight for has now happened. And everyone's seen like animals kind of roaming the streets and stuff. I've loved watching some of the videos of like goats taking over cafe areas and things. And it's like, okay, this stuff will happen. So are we going to go back to normal? What's the new normal going to be? It's really exciting, but terrifying at the same time, because it's the unknown, isn't it? It's like, what's going to happen?
Yeah, it's exciting because it's not all, I mean, besides the obvious consequences of so many people, perishing from that, there still are things which could be positive coming out of it. I mean, it doesn't reduce the what happened. I think I don't know to name that in an appropriate way, but yeah, people might work from home more. Again, I work in transport, and that's something we try to encourage, and something like Transport for London is trying to encourage that people don't show up at work every day at the same time in the morning and in the evening, and creates a situation which is impossible to manage. More people could work from home. We could be more ecological. We could be environmental friendly. We could be, but at the same time, I was reading today in Germany, it's interesting. It's the pharmaceutical industry in Germany, which is lobbying against the automotive industry, because the automotive industry is saying, well, look, so the pharmaceutical industry is saying, look, all the money we're going to put into, restarting the economy, this should be, environmentally friendly still. While you got other industries like the automotive industries, which are saying, well, you see, the situation is very bad. It's very tough. So I think we should forget the environmental targets we set ourselves, because the priority is to get people back to work and resume, go back to normal. And when we're back to normal, we can again try to be environmentally friendly, and so that would be a loss. I mean, the stuff like here in London, they're trying to improve the air quality. The objectives will be attained this year. But that doesn't mean we need to get back at doing things terribly. Yeah.
No, it's like I don't want it to go back to normal. Like I quite like how things are at the minute in a lot of ways. Obviously, not the illness and the sad parts, but the people spending more time at home, they're spending more time with their families, and I think just building up new hobbies, people's work-life balance is starting to come into focus. I've seen a lot of my friends that just work all the time that are like, you know what, like I'm not happy in like my job and what I want to do, and they're all kind of like reevaluating what they want out of life. And I think it's great to see people focusing on their mental health more and what's going to make them happy, and, you know, making sure they can do their job, but more effective ways of doing their job. And even my partner, I mean, he's still working, he's working from home, but just not being in an office every day, not having that commute on the public transport surrounded by people is just having such a good impact on him. It's like, well, it's great because I go into work, I work, I come home, and like he's already here. And he doesn't have to deal with the office stuff. And I remember speaking to Kat about it, and she was like, the most stressful part of her job is the commute. You cut that out for a lot of people, and they work better, they're more effective workers, and it's better for the environment without collapsing the economy. So there's a nice balance there.
Yeah, I find also people tend to oppose things, like they oppose reading on a book versus reading on a tablet, or working from home versus working from a workplace. The two things can cohabit. I mean, my last job before I lost it, I had 2 days of work from home, so two weeks which followed each other. And it was the first time I was allowed to work from home, and that the resources were there to allow me to. Yeah. But just having a single day of work from home per week, it meant already a lot for me. So if everyone go back to work, but say to their boss or their boss say, you look, you can work from home one day a week. It's already massive in terms of, transport, environment and well-being and all of that. So, and once you've got one day, well, it's more likely you can get a second, maybe. I mean, it's a knock-on effect. I mean, that's a fun thing. That's what we do with role-playing. And when we read fantasy and science fiction, we try to anticipate things, but, it's difficult when you're in the middle of the storm to try to work out what's the sun's going to look like behind that.
Because, like, my sister, she lives in Switzerland, her and her partner, and they've been working from home for years, and they have an office, and when they go into the office, like, no one has, like, a set desk. There's, like, desk spaces, and it's just, like, first come, first serve, so you can go in the office if you need to have meetings with people, or if you need to use, like, more secure broadband or anything like that. And the rest of the time you work from home and there's conference calls and things, and they get so much work done, but because they're at home, they have like a set quota of how much work they have to do. And as long as they do it, how you do it is up to them. So they can have like a 4-day week if they want to. As long as they get all their work done on Friday, they can have the day off and head up the mountains and go skiing or snowboarding or mountain biking. And I think if you start giving people that more freedom, there's a lot of people that will put the effort in. There's always the few that will kind of be lazy and they won't meet targets, but those people aren't going to do it whether they're working from home or working in the office. Like, it's a set mind.
And it opens,
works really well over there.
It opens options. I mean, for the employer, that means they don't need such a huge office space to host everyone. They can have a space which is a half, a third, or even smaller than what they usually do. And I mean, renting an office space, that's a lot of money. And then that means people can live and work in other places. I mean, I just got contacted by a recruiter about a job in High Barnet, which is still in London, but I was checking the commute from the nursery in the morning. It's it's like 80 minutes, 90 minutes from the nursery, despite being in London and going through the worst places and worst line to get there. And I told them, I could do it once per week and the rest working from home. So that's the situation from my point of view. From the point of view of the council, who's the person recruiting, that means that they could hire a broader spectrum of individuals. They don't need individuals who are within reach. You could take individuals who live wherever. And if they live wherever, maybe they're in place which is less expensive to live in. So maybe they don't have to pay them as much as they would pay me, because I'm in the center of London. So I got financial needs, and therefore I got expectations when I'm hired. So it opens possibilities for a lot of people.
Yeah, and there's so many people that can't get to workplaces for various different reasons, and there's like a whole new options available to them now. Going, well, actually, we can work from home. And, parents and things where, like yourself, when you're stuck around childcare, you have to bear in mind you commute. And what happens if the tube's late or if a train breaks down or your car fails? So being able to work from home and be able to, like, adapt it all around. Because I'm self-employed, so I've been working from home. I've been, like, flexible for years. And I couldn't imagine being stuck in an environment where I had to kind of be somewhere at a set time every day, because I just can't work to that kind of time scale. But I can get the work done if it's up to me and I've got my own flexibility to do it. So I much prefer the freelance way that I work. And there's so many other people that would benefit from that style of work because they can't work the 9-to-5 stuff for physical or mental health reasons, but they can still do the job that's required of them. They just can't do it in an office environment in this location.
There's also an interesting, to what point it can also influence this 9-to-5 mindset, because I've been a freelancer. It's not exactly what I'd like to go back to. But at the same time, I find it very annoying when you go to the office and the 9-to-5 is not only what people expect you to be around a lot, and what they look at, or even people, the way they look at themselves. It's not just employers versus employees. I see that a lot with employees, even younger ones. they feel like they have to stay late and so on, and they're super inefficient. Yeah. But they arrive early and they stay late, and everybody's like, oh, they're working hard because they stay late. And me, when I need to work with some of them, I'm like, they're mainly very inefficient in what they do. One of the first things I do when I've got a junior working for me in those environments is to say, I don't care. I don't want you to work quotation mark hard and stay till 7 in the evening to do one thing. What I need you to do is to be gone at 5:30, but I need something done by 5:30 because I prefer something done on time than having something which they spend doing things. They did not think what was essential in the task I asked them to, and they start doing things which are not required. They don't really think about the question which is asked to them. And then it's 5:30 and I'm going to stay late to finish. And you're like, I don't care. I'm going me now. So if you stay here, you haven't given me the thing I needed to send by the end of the day, or that I want to send early morning tomorrow. I'm not here to check on it. Or you feeling, making me feel guilty through peer pressure of leaving you here. I don't care about that. Just try to focus on be time efficient and self-considerate. People are not always considerate towards themselves. I'm not sure it's the right term.
Yeah, no, I get it completely. And there's like this whole thing about like the longer you work and the harder you work, like that means that's the definition of successful. And I'm like, well, no, it's like work hard, play hard. Like, you know, work smarter, not harder. Like, fit it all into smaller bits of time.
I call that being the right kind of lazy, because it took a lazy person to invent the wheel and the cartwheel. And I see
absolutely.
And I see so many people when I compare that to their use of softwares or any tools, they're like, I don't want to learn to use a cartwheel. And they just carry their bag of rocks rather than just invest the time in learning the wheel and the cartwheel. And then it's going to be so much easier. You will be able to be lazier by using a cartwheel. But they just don't.
Because I'm a very lazy person. And I'll look at things and I'll be like, okay, what's the easiest way for me to get this done? It means that I have to knuckle down and work my ass off for like this amount of time so I can create something that is then nice and streamlined. Like, I will do that because it's better in the long run rather than just slugging away at something for ages because I can't be bothered to learn. I'm like, actually, it's worth my time to learn that, and then I can just sit back and it can do the thing on its own.
Yeah, exactly. Or do we bring back the conversation to gaming?
It's like we're going a bit off topic from Global,
well,
Club, aren't we?
It's been on. Well, we've been off topic quite a bit in Café Rollis lately, so it was the case with Kat also, but I guess you were already playing with people from around the world. You play with Anno from Hanover, am I right?
I have played with Hanno. Well, I haven't played with him yet. I'm dying to. I've met Hanno at Dragon Meet, and we've spoken on and off, and I really, really want to be a player in one of his games. So Hanno, if you're watching, like, I've got lots of spare time, hit me up.
Well, yeah.
I've been playing like role play games for years, like absolute years. Like, I remember back in high school when it was like properly like a nerdy thing to do, and we had like our own little cult thing, and you didn't really talk about it because people didn't understand it. And then it's just, I love how much it's grown in popularity. You know, and YouTube's helped so much with that. Not just with Critical Role, obviously. But like Acquisitions Inc. is still one of my favorites. And there's just so many different games to play. I want to play so many different games. And with one of the things that I want to do with DID and D&D is start people off with D&D because it's one of the easier ones to kind of get behind.
I
but then
disagree.
Like do like, a little mini campaign. Do you know?
Yeah, no, I've got strong opinions about Dungeons & Dragons, as you can ask Kat.
I have heard this.
It's not that I dislike, something I repeated a million times. It's not that I dislike Dungeons & Dragons, but, the two things I think there's really, there's no other word than that hegemony of Dungeons & Dragons at the moment. I don't think there's ever been in any other media such a, overbearing of a single product over all the others. I remember had a boss who used to tell me about when the Beatles were on, but back in the days that you would hear the Beatles mm-hmm. everywhere all the time. And when they split suddenly created that void for other bands. But even though people still knew that there was a thing called music that has been other musicians before the Beatles. And even as the Beatles was going on, you know, the media didn't call music the Beatles. Or do you know that Beatles can suit your mood in the office space, or that it's good for mental health? Well, Dungeons & Dragons is like that. Do you know that Dungeons & Dragons is good for mental health?
It is getting very saturated. It's like, I love it as a game, but there are other games out there.
Yeah.
Which is what I kind of want to do on the channel, is show people that this is us playing D&D. This is us playing Vampire the Masquerade. This is us playing Mage. This is us playing Werewolf. This is us going back to like Pathfinder or Starfinder. Let's jump into Tales of the Loop. Let's play a Conan adventure. Let's, you know, pick something randomly that no one's played before, or at least that no one else is doing, because there's so many just things that you can do. And Changeling. I really want to play Changeling because I really want to be a Kitsune. Because that would just be amazing. Not that I have a thing about foxes at all.
I think we're getting there. They got Vampire by Night, Shields of Tomorrow. Even Critical Role is playing more and more other games. So people are slowly starting to get aware. But yeah, I a bit less those last couple of weeks, but I've been on TikTok, and it's D&D.
I love TikTok. It's D&D just insane, isn't it, on TikTok? It's like everything I'm looking at, it's all the tropes and things that I'm getting really annoyed at. It's like, if I see one more bard seducing a dragon, I think I'll throw my phone out the window. Like, I'm just, like, there are better ways to play a bard. I mean, in our campaign that we're doing, like, Luna's like a half unicorn bard. She won't be seducing anyone. And, I get so annoyed with how many, it's great that people are coming into the community and that's wonderful, but don't just stay at D&D because there's, you know, have a play with Pathfinder if you want something that's similar to D&D because you can modify so much in Pathfinder. I love the modifications. It's like picking them out of thin air. Or Dark Heresy if you want to go for something like nice and, Dark Heresy.
Friendly.
I love Dark Heresy.
nice and cheery.
Yeah, go nice and cheery, then switch to Dark Heresy and welcome to a world of war. Where when you roll, you know exactly where you've hit. It's like, I've got their right arm, or I've got their left leg, or I've got a headshot. Like, I love that kind of, the mechanics in that, where you actually know exactly where you've hit, and it's taken out of your control. The dice choose for you. That you will just die.
I played a bit of Dark Heresy, though. That was nice. It's a interesting universe,
It's a very fascinating. I mean, I remember playing my first game of Warhammer 40K when I was like 15, 16, hanging out in the Games Workshops as the little goth girl that I was. And I had like an entire Tyranid army that were like pink and purple with glitter on. Because that's how you paint monsters, right? And then I hadn't played for ages, and my partner is really into his 40K, and his friends all kind of play in like tournaments and stuff, and so now I'm like delving back into the world of 40K. I resisted purchasing an army because once you start, you just can't stop with that stuff. You just start collecting more and more, and you then just get obsessed with painting, and mini painting is just a money leeching thing just as it is. You're like, oh, I want to paint this one and that one and this one. And
but at least you got the role playing games now, so you can delve into the world. I don't know if they ever.
Yeah.
There's probably adventures using. I mean, that's why I'm a fantasy. But it was not even the miniature. I played it online. I remember a game of Blood Bowl you could play, and you would play one character by this old web browser thing, and you would play the action of your single character, and there was a championship. There was a fashion for that at the moment. But I haven't heard of Blood Bowl Adventures. Would be fun to run a mini campaign.
It would be
of Blood Bowl, a Blood Bowl team.
That would be amazing. I love Blood Bowl. Cause when they re-released it a couple of years ago as a game you can buy rather than the computer game. And my dog's named after the chaos god of Blood Bowl. so he's called Nuffle because they can't pronounce NFL. They pronounce it Nuffle. So Nuffle is, that's why my dog's called Nuffle. It's because of Blood Bowl. But I would love to have her to play in a campaign that was in like the Blood Bowl universe.
I find that surprising. That really, really it doesn't exist, actually. It should exist. I mean, that's a thing. Should.
Someone needs to homebrew that. That'd be a great thing to homebrew.
That would be cool. You know, it's funny. We were talking about people going back to work and so on. At the moment, I'm wondering if I'm going to go back to... I mean, immediately, in a short notice, to playing around the table, because I started a campaign weekly, somewhat short session, less than 3 hours, more 2 hours and a half.
Wow.
But weekly, every Monday, and it's with my very first gaming group, from when I was in Belgium. So I haven't played with them in more than a decade, maybe 14 years. And when they started a new table, usually they played around the table. And because of the quarantine, they said, oh, the game master was like, oh, I'm going to run an online game. If I run an online game, I could invite people I haven't played with in a while because they don't live in Belgium anymore. So he invited me. So now I play every Monday. And even now when I'm thinking of running a campaign, I'm very tempted to run it online because it's more convenient. You don't have the commute of going to a game. You don't have the noisy environment where you play a game. You don't have the expenditure because just going to, I love Bad Moon Cafe, but it's noisy and just buying a few drinks, that's minimum £10, which just burn in the air for nothing of high value, really, overpriced pizza and so on. So I think I could stick to online gaming for a little while.
It's fun. I mean, I don't think anything is going to take away tabletop because there's nothing better than kind of just being at the table around your friends.
Again, it's not replacing.
But online gaming is. It's really fun. I think people don't appreciate as much as you do. And until you do it, you're like, actually, this is fun. And you can still see things and there's loads of different apps and things you can use to help make the experience better. And I'd look forward to seeing some of your games online.
I think
share them. Please stream them.
I think I'd like to start a new campaign with new players, or maybe not new players, but players who never played together. You know, I like to cast my player. It's actually something I haven't heard about much in, you know, the podcast and so on, advising about you. It's often stories of people who happen to be in the, they have a group and they have a game master, and all the advice is about the game master and the group to get along together. And there's very few advice of discussion revolving around, or do you choose one another? Or do you, as player, rather than treat it like, oh, you happen to live in, I don't know, that town somewhere, you are the players in that town, and there's a game master in that town, and you're stuck with each other, and there's no option, and you need to get along. There's very few discussion about, actually, I'm playing this Warhammer 40k this week, so it would be great to have Dani at the table because she's a big fan and I want to run that campaign. And the next campaign is like, I'm playing something completely different, so I won't be inviting Dani for this one. Not because I don't like Dani, but because for this one, I want to play with other people. You know, the curation of things.
I think it's great for that because you can then go, actually, I know this person really enjoys this particular fandom or these kind of things. Let's bring them into a game like this and see how, because having different people in your games is great. And everyone's kind of been at the table where you don't always get on with everyone you're playing with, or you don't particularly like the style that someone role plays, but you can't change it because you're stuck in that group. You know, there's not a lot of other people you can do. So when you're playing online, you get that choice of going, actually, let's see if I can find some more people that want to run a campaign that is like this, and let's run one like this. But it'd be nice to see the, as you said, like the background interplay of the people, and, you know, if they actually get on and how they choose. And if you could be a GM and go, okay, I want to run this campaign, I need someone that is going to be like this and fill this criteria, and have like a nice cast list and go, okay, actually, I want these people in a campaign because they'd either gel well together or they'd be very conflicting, and see how you do running the same campaign with different people.
Yeah, well, rather than cope with whoever you have, you pick people to have very different experiences across table. But this kind of a taboo of it at the moment, I feel like culturally in the community, it's a bit like, oh, you did not invite me for your next game. That means that you don't like me anymore. There's not this. Yeah. I think it's
just don't take it personally.
But I think it's a question of scarcity of games. You know, it's kind of a sinful circles because people tend to stick with one another. There's not a lot of movement between groups and tables. Yeah. Groups tend to stick with one another. I don't know. Maybe playing online could change that because again, suddenly.
Hopefully it will. I really hope that it will bring the community more close together, and you see different people kind of mixing in and either bringing new characters to a different table or even like cross campaigning, and like someone gets zapped out of their world in one campaign over something, and then boom, they're in someone else's campaign playing the same character, and you get to follow their journey. I would love to see campaigns start to mix between each other more with the same characters, so you see the characters that you love and you enjoy going into different campaigns. And it's like, oh my gosh, like I wasn't expecting that person to show up in this world, and yet here they are. And it'll be a nice thing for the viewers to watch, because you then get a nice cross mix of viewers. So it's a win-win for everyone. But people just seem very scared to open up themselves to that kind of situation, which is a shame. So hopefully people will get past that now everyone's stuck inside and losing their minds, to not take things personally and actually go, you know what? I want to bring this character to your campaign, and let's do it and get in there.
So does that mean if you go back in the high-level entertainment in Dungeons & Dragons, that you would dream to have a Jim Dark Magic hang out with the Mighty Nine and having land in the world of Acquisition Incorporated?
Could you imagine Jim Dark Magic and Jester?
Oof.
Like,
ooh.
That would just be brilliant. I really want to see Jim Dark Magic and Jester do a campaign. But it'd be wonderful, because they already do it a little bit with like the Acquisitions Inc. team, you know, like the C team and stuff. They have their characters mixing through, and like Strix has come into play on a few others. And so it'd be nice for them to actually jump into a Critical Role campaign or any of the others that are going on. And suddenly, you know, Vex'ahlia appears in something and starts like taking on things or helping them with a campaign, and then Jester comes somewhere and then not. And it'd be nice to see these characters all intermingle with each other. I'd love it to happen, but it probably won't.
Well, you never know. You never know. I mean, yeah, apparently they haven't resumed their gaming, so they're refraining from trying to have sessions online separately from one another at Critical Role. But once people start, that's when suddenly you've got the options. So, yeah, who knows? I mean, if people are asking for it, that might happen. Acquisition Incorporated was one of the very first actual player was exposed to, and I did listen. And at the beginning, there were small arcs, so it was quite nice. But I think the latest episode I listened to, and it means it dates back, Will Whitton was still in there, so it was with AOFIL. So I remember fondly of him being thrown in a acid pit. So that was quite cool.
His roles were just legendary, and because Acquisitions, like yourself, was one of the first ones that I started to listen to, and I followed it pretty much up until now. I think I'm missing about 4 episodes behind. I need to catch up on. But I've loved watching it go through. And when Chris Perkins left and Jeremy Crawford took over, I was like, oh, no, I'm not going to enjoy this at all. And then I'm like, oh, actually, Jeremy, you're doing well here. It surprised me because you get so attached to a particular DM. And to have someone else come in and DM the group that you love so much, I was very kind of conflicted about that. And I didn't watch Acquisition Inc. for about a year because I was like, no, I like Chris Perkins as a DM. I don't want to watch someone else. But then I'm like, well, you know, Jeremy is kind of the rules designer, so let's give him a go. And oh my God, like,
what was it?
I'd love.
Hmm? Was it Chris Perkins who showed up? Well, he probably did that several times, but it's one of the performance in a game I found the most amazing. I think it was Chris Perkins. We played a game, with, the Mighty Nine with Critical Role, and he played a kobold. Was it Splurg? And
it was the sprite, the little, Splurg thing. And he's like, he lived for like 11 days and like,
yes.
I love him as a DM. I love when you watch him play a game, like, oh, it's so much fun. And I think it's really interesting to watch the games that Chris Perkins is a player on, because you see the DMs start to get a little bit like, oh God, like he knows all the rules and stuff, and they get a little bit wary, but he plays so nicely. He's such a nice player, and he won't argue like the DM. It's like he just goes with whatever the DM says at the time. But his roleplay ability is wonderful, and he's so funny. And that little character that just arrived and died, and oh, it was just brilliant.
Yeah, I just love that character because his performance was 100% from the start. And yeah, quickly this idea of so how long do kobold live? 11 days. And how old are you? 11 days.
11 days.
And then there's this situation. I don't want to spoil it. And there's cartoons of it, so people can Google it. I think it's Splurg, Chris Perkins. And yeah, when the character dies, it happens quite fast. But it really feels like,
I was just like,
the player is like, yeah, you know what? This character is supposed to come and go very fast.
Yeah. And it did, because you got so attached to this character so quickly, and then when it happened, everyone was like, it just, like, that quickly. Because we're re-watching a couple of campaigns at the minute, so we're not that far off that episode, and I'm so looking forward to it. Just to see Chris Perkins play, because I love that Spurg little character. He was just fantastic. To get so attached to a character so quickly it's a credit to how well he roleplays.
Yeah, there's so many cartoons made out of that, but yeah, it's magical. And I didn't see a lot of Critical Role games, but this one is engraved in my head, immediately. I think, I was probably crying of tears of laughter.
Absolutely.
So, yep, sorry.
No, go.
Okay. I was about to say it's going to be about time for me to wake up my son from his daily nap, so he goes to bed at the appropriate time in the evening. Thank you so much for joining us. Danny, do you have anything else you want to discuss, plug, and either way, tell people where they can find you if you wish to be found?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to come and find out more about me and what it's like to live with multiple personalities, if you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, everything's Geek Dogs and D&D, D-I-D even. Myself and Kat Tulip do a regular show where we're making basically D&D characters out of my alters to give you an idea as to the kind of full-rounded people that they are and how different everyone is. So come along and come and talk to us. If you want to know anything about what it's like to live with it, I am an open book. As far as that's concerned, I'm quite happy to talk about it. And we want to have a nice, safe place where everyone can just accept each other for who they are, like, regardless of where you are in the world, what conditions you live with, race, religion, we don't care. If you're a nice person, you're in. If you're a nasty person, you're blocked. That's kind of how it goes.
Simple.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I'm about to, so hopefully tonight, if I manage before in the middle of the game. Ooh, the ice cream truck is in the street.
Ice cream
man! I'm probably gonna wake up my son. I should release the final part of my actual play of Dungeons and Dragons. You see, I can enjoy Dungeons and Dragons, which are recorded with London RPG community. Of course, I'm tooting my own horn, and the horn of the game master Andy and the magnificent players. But yeah, I don't want to spoil it. But there's something special going on in towards the end of this episode. So I really, really recommend to people to binge the three previous episodes and then to check this fourth episode because, yeah, again, toot my own horn. There's something in that episode that you don't hear often in an actual play. I don't actually recall hearing it in an actual play. It should have happened elsewhere, but yeah. So, go check our adventures in Kantus. They are quite good, and we're closing that chapter. So you got a full little arc in four episodes for you waiting there. It's cool.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah, I don't remember. It's cool. Kantus with London RPG community. Anyway, thank you so much, Danny. Hope to run
thank
into
you so
you again.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, it's a pleasure. It's been great. It's great to have those conversations, you know, a positive coming out of a negative. Yeah, I'm having conversation with a lot of awesome people, including yourself. So that was great. Thank you so much. Bye, everyone.
Yeah. Bye.
Our logo is designed by Rolin Kunz. Our theme song is Playtime by Jazar, which you can download on the Free Music Archive. A video version of this episode is available on YouTube. Please consider subscribing to our channel there. Leave us a review on your favorite podcasting platform. If you would like more Café Rollist, you can also get access to our archive of 100 or so additional episodes via Patreon. If you want to be informed of everything released by the Rollist, we have a monthly newsletter for you to join. And if you want to contribute via the chat room to one of our recordings, subscribe to our Twitch channel and social media accounts to be informed of when streams are happening. Finally, links to everything I just mentioned can be found in the description of this episode. Thanks for listening to us, and remember, you are the Rollist.